Welcome, everyone, to our Thursday night Stargate Roundtable. We're happy to have all of you here with us this evening. And we have our Angel Sue to start, and also tonight Annie Rose and Rainbird, and the full crew is here tonight. So, Angel Sue, I pass talking stick to you first.
Well, thank you very much. Greetings to you all in the light of the most radiant one and in the office of the Christ, and only in the office of the Christ. And we're invoking the loving energies of Saint Germain and the Violet Flame. We're celebrating Annie Rose's victory, and we're asking that you claim yourselves as that divine child of the universe. And just breathe in unconditional divine love and share gratitude on the out-breath. Bring your awareness from your head down into your heart. Call in your beloved support team. And let's just go right into the aspect of the peace breath. That's where you simply take a breath in, and on the out breath, you say the word peace. And then play a memory of when you have felt wonderful. This will allow the vibrations of your body to embrace that and anchor it in even more. So here we go. Take that breath in. And on the out breath, say the word peace. And go back to that place and time where you felt amazing, wonderful. And intend that this anchor in as long as you need this higher vibration of feeling good, that it will be lifted up with your intent by the ministering angels and the avatars, all those that are all about allowing you to function at your highest good. And they will keep improving this wonderful feeling in the background for you. Peace. Making it even more beautiful, more harmonious, and filled with wild, unrestrained grace. Peace. Now look at what is going on in your life, your concerns, your intentions, your dreams, your desires to manifest a wonderful existence for yourself. And as you do this, call in this same aspect for all those that you claim in your life, all those that you're aware of, whether it's this dimension or others, call it in for our beloved Faction 3, for the galactic forces of light, for Nasara Nasera, the Reformation Act, for all events, places, conditions, and things besides all people. And here we're going to welcome in all the beings tied in with that, with the original law of creation, the law of one. That the perfect divine solution will manifest now and forevermore to bring forth heaven now. And so with that, we welcome all of these beings, and we just say thank you. Both white hats and black hats, thank you for all the learning opportunities you have brought us. We know ourselves better every moment because of you. And we choose now to bring forth heaven. So we are saying, we are all one. And when one is harmed, then all are harmed. As one is helped, then everything improves. All are helped. Therefore, in the name of who we are, and we are one with all there is, we ask only that which is the highest good of all concerned happen here. And we ask that this support comes forth to lift up and magnify over and over and over this desire for all of us to live as the divine children, as the divine world, as the divine creation. And it just keeps rolling without restraint, without limitations, for the highest good under the law of one for all of us. And we give thanks that this is done with grateful hearts. And we close by saying, all men, all women, all children, all beings, all creation, we are all one. And I pass the talking stick.
Well, thank you, Angel Sue. And are you getting any relief from your the heat and humidity that you've been having?
A slight. We had a storm earlier today, but it's still warm in Louisiana.
Yes.
So thank you for asking.
Well, we know with you that you will find comfort in this heat as well. So hopefully you'll be able to get some air conditioning that will relieve a little of it.
Thank you, Marita Robert. And we're making it through. We'll be okay.
Well, thank you for being here. And we'll pass the talking stick next to Rainbird and ask her to help us understand the energies of the Mayan calendar for the week. So, Rainbird?
Yes, thank you, Robert. And, yeah, the energies are good. We're in this wave of ease. And this is a wave of the human. And it's about our being in right relations. And it's also about activating cosmic consciousness. So, with that, Today we have a six come on in this wave. And six is that tone of rhythm. It's the tone of equality. It's about bringing balance to opposites. And it represents the active receptivity of balance, which is not static or fixed, and just reminding you that the spider web has no beginning or ending. So our emotion, too, can come from any position. So with this tone, we have a dynamic potential of balance. And it's also doubled on this day as a sixth tone. It is also guided by the sixth tone. So we have a double aspect with that, that energy of bringing in balance. And with Kaban, that's about being the keeper of the earth and having that awareness of earth's energy. And so we have that tone of balance working with earth's energy today and accessing planetary harmony and being that balancing point ourselves. So it's a good day to do the good work we do here, bringing heaven to earth. And then tomorrow we have a seven S-Fob, and seven is that position of the center of all creative powers. It's the conduit, it's the midpoint, the top of the mountain, represents the ability to move from source and back to matter. So it's a powerful tone. Tomorrow we're working with that seven, And with that X-knob energy, the mirror or the cutting tool, the flint, it's a warrior aspect. So work on groundedness and being in that wise use of honesty and self-understanding. Be honest with yourself. So it's a good day for scrying the unseen and working with the fluidity of this energy. It's always in motion, and it's a good day for persistence. So thank you for that warrior energy working with tomorrow. And then Saturday with an 8 co-op, the storm, revisit that storm energy. We just went through the wave of co-op and about the storm, that visionary aspect, lighting clear thought, creating transformation for others. So all you people in the storm areas, you can remember the storm energy on Saturday as well. And with that 8 energy, that's about finding tuning and harmonic resonance. It's galactic in its energy. There's integrity with it. It represents the counterclockwise spin of the galactic frequency. So there's harmony when one is in perfect resonance with the universe. So that's our energy for...
right now I'm on the radio, hon.
Let's see, where were we? Yeah, with that set. On Sunday, yeah. With the co-op. That is Saturday, excuse me. And then on Sunday, we have a howl. We finish this unial, and it's a 9 tone, pulsation, greater cycles, expanded cycles, it's solar, completion, and expansion. So, Sunday, with that howl, a howl then, and a howl is the 20th or the 0 glyph in the Mayan calendar and represents a healing aspect, the sun, and that rise to Christ consciousness striving towards wholeness and also transmitting energy to others. So that's a good day on Sunday as we complete this unial, and then on Monday we begin the next unial, and it is the 7th unial. And so we do that with a 10, that manifestation tone. And Anish, of course, is that beginning. It's the dragon. It's the mother energy. It's an artist, and it's about creation and self-dependence, trusting in the universe and clarity of mind, all those energies beginning this 7th unial. And so we do that on Monday. So manifesting these new beginnings this way. With that 10 energy. And then on Tuesday, at 11, eek, letting go. With that tone, 11, and eek, the wind, the voice of our ancestors, the voice of our guides, listening to those voices in the wind. Pay attention to those winds of change and let that 11 energy just wipe it all away. So that's Tuesday's energy. And then on Wednesday, we have a 12, that crystal tone of complex stability. And Akbal, the 9th. And that is an artist aspect, and it's about our participation in our own abundance and our belief in our abundance and learning from our dream time. And in gifts are the protection of the night. And so it's a good time to let go of self-judgment or withdrawal. So work with that Akbal energy with that 12th tone of crystal clear thinking and that complex stability. And then on Thursday when we come back, we'll finish this wave of being in right relations with all beings and with the Khan, that seed tone, our energy, a healing aspect about being our openness to life, our self-determination, seeking harmony, and our timing. All those seed qualities on Thursday when we come back with that 13 tone of transcendence and transformation, that universal movement of change with these new seeds. So that's a good way to work with this ways and finish up that ways, and here we are. Then when we meet next week, we'll have done a whole week with no seasonal or portal days in it at all. But then after that, we're going to go into a whole bunch of them. We'll have, I think on Saturday, we'll have 10 portal days in a row of the next week. So that's not this week. We're just cruising this week and getting our grounding and working with being in right relations with the earth and that wave of Eve, being that human servant warrior. So there you go. That's the Mayan energy for the week, and so that completes that. And I would like to make just a little mention of the universal energy work, if that's okay, Marita.
Of course. Sounds like next week with all those 7 portal days in a row, it's going to be a pretty powerful opportunity, right?
Absolutely. Well, what it is, when we start the 7th union on Monday, that brings us into those 3 unions right in the middle of the Zolkin that really represent, the 7th represents the 10 tones in a row, the 7 tons days in a row, or kin in a row that have portal days or seasonal days. Those are all look like DNA, as it, that's where the Zolkin pattern looks like the DNA in the core. And it represents that aspect, plus then the 8th unial is the core. It's the middle unial in that route. And so that, like going up the spine, it, all 20 days are core days. So we follow that, this dizzy core, seasonal days with 20 core days in the middle, and then the one on the other side then as it reflects the right side, the left side. And actually, as you were laying down, pardon?
So that really kind of brings us up to the day out of time almost, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely it does. So mm-hmm. we're going to be starting the new year and have the day out of time in the middle of this, the core section of this this sacred Zolkin pattern. So it's pretty intense. And
for those that maybe not have known the day out of time, July 25th?
Well, I know that. Let's see. It's going to be a portal day, I can tell you that. But I don't have the.
It's on Saturday.
Button.
The 25th, I think, is on the Saturday.
Okay.
So,
yeah,
that'd be our day out of time.
It is right now, I can't remember, though. I have looked it up.
Okay. But, well, go ahead with your energy work information so that everybody knows
yeah,
what's
I
going on there.
Yes, I thank you very much. I was wanting to say that we will be having our second Sunday of the month call at 3 o'clock on Sunday at the usual phone number, and I'll give that out because there's people who took the class, and even if you're interested in the class, I would like to have a new basic level class. So if you're interested and just want to hear it, be in on the conversation, that's okay too. There's no reason why you can't do that. So if, I'm going to give you that number, and we're just going to talk about universal energy. And if there's new people there, we'll keep the conversation more introductory, but also have conversation with people who have been practicing and such. So that number is,
and the time is 3 o'clock?
It's at 3 o'clock on Sunday.
Right.
Okay, and the number is 712-775-7031. And again, 712-775-7031. Those last four, 7031. And that PIN code is another 9 numbers. And it's 722-364, and I'll say that again, 767-722-364, pound, and that'll get you there. And it's just a short call, and I would like to keep it introductory for people getting ready to come to the next basic, and I'll make it either the end of July or sometime in August. It'll probably be around the middle of August, actually, when I do that new basic level. And what I'd like to do, actually, is combine it and just do all those levels that I've taught together at one time, but do it in two sessions. So I'm thinking about reformatting how I teach it. So I hope you can come if you're interested in learning this healing technique. It is very powerful and basically gives you a mastery level of healing that's effective and really, really for the people. I feel like this is one of the things I've learned that feels to me like it's for the people. And so I invite you all to come. So I pass this talking stick. Thank you, Marita, for letting me do that.
Well, thank you, Carolyn, and we appreciate all your help in teaching and your willingness to share what you have been able to gather. So, Annie Rose, what would you have to say this evening? You have some comments or anything you have been observing since you finally got to be back here at your home?
Yes. Number one, I want to ask Sue one thing before she leaves. Is a 5-day or an 11-day good for starting a diet?
Good for starting what?
A diet.
Yes. I don't know. I'll look up some information if I can, and we can talk. I can talk to you about it. If anybody else on the line here wants to comment, go ahead.
Well, Lady Master, I just want to make sure that you've been through a lot, you know, psychologically, emotionally, and physically, that, you know, you want to do something that's going to continue to give you the proper nutrients and energy. Absolutely. On a regular basis.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you know, she doesn't know about the Purium products, which are non-GMO and are all natural, dehydrated, all the greens and everything. So maybe I'll have to send her some information about that. Did you gain some weight while you were in the hospital? Is that what happened?
No, it's not that so much. But I have so many people asking me about when to start a diet. And,
okay.
I can tell you this before we go into details too much. First the eclipse is going to be on September 13th, and that eclipse will actually be our fourth eclipse of the year. But it's going to rule health, especially for the Virgos, and so that's why I'm looking for health things, because I have a moon in Virgo, so I'm going to have to watch myself, what I eat, affecting my health. Talk about mixed up. I had 10 physicians working on me. And one would say, drink more water, and the other would say, don't drink any water. And I couldn't believe that a physician would say that to me, but he did. And so I listened to the nurses more, who kept sipping water. And I had a wonderful nurse. And they were very caring, and they're very, very intellectually stimulated, because they love to explain things to you. So I thought that was great. And the place I was in was a rehab center. And, you know, the rehab, I mean, it's so slow. Yeah, sometimes you feel like you don't see anything happening right away. You don't see yourself shrinking. You don't see yourself standing. It's just trying to walk, and I could not walk because I lost my balance. I had lost my balance. I got it back. Thanks for 6 hours. And a lot of effort on my behalf by the physical therapist. And he was very interesting. He was a man from India, and we had a lot of things to discuss, because that's a country that does rely on astrology a lot. And
those guys can't say no to. He's, yes, you can, yes, you can. And I said, all right, Captain, and so forth. But at first they said they were going to work on building up my legs, and after 2.5 weeks of that, then all of a sudden they said, your legs are too muscular. We have to stretch them to soften the muscles. And about 10 of them, what you ate. So the protein was the almighty ruler of the diet. And, but it was the learning experience, which all illnesses are. And I just, like I told you before, Rita, you know how grateful I am that I wasn't paralyzed. Because most strokes just do encounter paralysis of some sort somewhere in the body. But I was very fortunate, very blessed, because I was able to walk now. And, yeah, it was a struggle. And, yeah, I wish it would have happened faster, but it didn't. That's okay. There had to be a reason for it. And one of the reasons is because I meditated more than I've ever sat down 5 weeks straight and meditated. But it did help. And my beautiful daughter-in-law and my son, I mean, I worry about them more than me, because my son, he's 54, and he right now is getting a lot of gray hairs. So, you know, I'm like, you're getting clear oil for Christmas. That's it. If you're worrying about it, you won't even get clear oil. But, why do I need that? I cover your gray hair. And I can worry too much. My daughter-in-law, she's angelic. She really is. She's a beautiful girl, and she's beautiful from the inside out. And,
well, I know I've talked to your son a few times when I couldn't reach you just to make sure everything was progressing. So we're glad that you had that loving support from your nurse and your therapist and your family. And is there anything astrologically that really stands out that you've paid attention to here that before we pass the talking stick to Tara and Rama, if you had anything like that that you thought was important to share?
I've studied an awful lot on these two eclipses that are coming up. And I told you today I take a lot of notes. The problem is I can't locate the notebooks. I took notes in. But I can recall a lot of it. And I'm going to tell you right now, everybody, I'm going to explain what areas of your life are going to be affected for each sign. But an eclipse actually takes place in the same exact position every 54 years, which takes us back to 1961. And I believe that was in the area where it was in the air. The eclipse this time is in Virgo, which is the first sign. But the eclipse is going to happen September 13th. It's going to be a lunar eclipse, meaning the moon. And that is going to affect each and every one of us in some area of our life. And Aries, for instance, is going to be my 10th house. And the 10th house is career. And, you know, I have to believe that, because I'm finally going to be able to get back to normal as far as my consultations are concerned. I'm very happy to be doing that. And it's really, you know, it's very appealing to me to be able to sit down and go through the meditations that I do for a consultation. And, any Aries or Aries rising sign is going to be that. And Tauruses are going to be affected in their 2nd and 11th house. That's friends and hopes and wishes in the 11th. Friends, hopes, and wishes. And 2 is financial. So they're going to hear of some people who are their friends who are in need of financial aid. And Gemini, here we go, Gemini, very, very strong in your chart. It's going to affect the end of the communications. So it may be that you make up your mind not to allow time to be used or usurped by that which is not positive. You might clean your closets out as far as who you talk to. then we go to Cancer, and that's going to be in the third house will also be affected by communication. And also with children. So you're going to have a lot of sets, have a lot of patience. And because it's like they're on a different vibration than you are, as far as their way of thinking. And if anyone's trying to hold the stone, just understand they have a different perspective on life. That, you know, instead of freedom of speech, maybe America should have had it put in the Constitution of freedom of thought. And that's going to be really interesting. And also with Cancer, home is going to be affected. In other words, they're changing. You could say, where is the summer gone? Where is the spring gone? Why didn't I get this done? Why didn't I get that done? Just relax. You can begin now to start planning, trying to get things done one by one. My dad was Croatian. He was a beautiful, beautiful man. My dad was Croatian. He'd always tell us, Polako, Polako. Polako is slow, slow. Go slow, go slow. And he said, you go fast is a waste of time. And I said, no, I started with him, you know. Go slow is a waste of time. And he'd say, no, go slow is not a waste. And you go fast, you just miss things. And don't think of the outcome. What's the implication?
Well, we'll need to finish up here pretty soon because we've got to get to some of the hard news in this first hour yet. So maybe next week when you come back, you can talk to us a little more about this. Are you ready yet to give your phone number out for consultations, or do we need to wait a week or two for that?
You can do that. Like I said, I'm glad to be back and able to do it. 219 is my area code. 219, and it's Merrillville, Indiana, 46410. I'm sorry, 219-980-0010. Now, Maria, I'm not a zero a bunch of times. I'm just a 980-0010.
Right.
And,
okay, and you're in the Midwest time zone,
Central time zone. Central, right.
Okay. All right. Well, we're so happy to have you back, and we'll see what develops till next week. And so it's 219-980-0010 if people want to call you and find a time to get a consultation with you. And we'll just look forward to seeing you back next week.
Right. And when I do give consultations, nobody has to take for long distance. Because I have that in my plan. And so I ask people to give me their phone numbers when they call, and I'll call them back as soon as I'm free. And that way they don't have to invest money in long distance charges. But I appreciate it.
Okay.
Program.
Thank you, Anna. I'm so glad to see you back. It's just really great. We've been keeping you all of us have been keeping you in our hearts, and I'm really glad to see you back home.
I know that, and I know that prayers definitely work. I know they do.
We thank you very much, and then Tara and Rama, let's have you step forward here and tell us a little bit about, Rama, if you've talked to anybody, we want to hear about that, and then whatever else you think that we want to put in. We got about 20 minutes yet in this first hour.
I just want to say one thing real quickly, and just rest assured.
Okay.
The eclipses normally bring a shake-up in our life. But in this case, Taurus, the Virgos, and the Capricorns who have beneficial changes in their life. I think that's important for all three of those.
Say fiscal changes?
All kinds, because Capricorns also have Saturn here. And you know what that means? Karma. And Saturn's there. So in some respects, they'll see karma pattern hitting the people who are not positive in their life instead of them.
Okay.
Positive sex.
Well, that would be... All right. Well, thank you. You've got a lot of a wealth of knowledge to share, and we're glad to have you back doing that. So we'll see you next week. And Rama, you want to talk first, or Tara, who's going to step forward?
Hi, Rama.
Oh.
Hi. Glad you're back, Annie.
Thank you, dear. Glad to hear you.
Indeed.
Rama had quite an escapade. Was that on Tuesday?
Tuesday.
On Tuesday.
What
so
happened?
Well.
Okay. Yeah, tell us about that. And then I see we also have Charlie on line two from Iowa. So whenever, shall we take his question first, or do you want to go first, Rama? What your choice.
Rama, bring me up.
We can...
Rama, bring me up to date, please.
Well, we'll do that. We will.
Okay. Let's take Charlie because there's a reason he's calling so quickly. Maybe he has a question for you, Annie. I'm not sure, but let's take Charlie.
Okay, Charlie, can you hear me? What's your question?
Well, it actually isn't Charlie. It's actually Chandra. The translation got messed up.
Chandra Das.
Yeah, when I saw the Iowa, I thought maybe that's who it was. Okay.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Sounds like Charlie. Yeah, I just wanted to call and ask if you received the ease. Did you get that that I sent to Rama?
Yes.
We just got it.
Oh, excellent.
We just got it.
Yeah. Cool.
We did. So.
Yeah. All right. I'm keeping you in mind. That's really going to help, I think.
Oh, I sure hope so, Commander.
Where in Iowa are you from?
Fairfield, the home of Maharishi University of Management. It was founded in, 1974. And when Maharishi built the Golden Domes here, they had these geodesic domes where they practiced group meditation together. So it's kind of a unique place.
My husband's son grew up and is still living in Kyoto, Iowa. And we go there almost every weekend.
What was the city?
Okay.
My grandchildren, two grandchildren, and my husband's son live in Kyoto.
Where did you say? Where in Iowa?
Kyoto.
Kyoto. Yeah, I'm in southeast Iowa, so I think Kyoto is north. Is that north or south?
No,
I don't know. It's
probably north of you.
Yeah. Well, let's not interrupt the Rama's report. I can't wait.
Well, we're glad that you got your question answered here quickly. And Rama, tell us what's happening.
Yes.
Well, I can say with great certainty. All the energies that are pouring into this little sector of our soul system, I mean, there is just so much going on that is so magnificent with what's happening with ourselves and the energies pouring in and this planet uplifting itself from the Maya that has gone on for so long. And at the same time, the 13 families are running around with their hair on fire because they are flat busted, broke, and They cannot start a nuclear war. Ashtar has assured me face to face. No nukes, and he means it. And at the same time, NATO is doing what it's doing over there, playing.
Yeah, they've got thousands of NATO boots on the ground in border territory, and they've got about 1,500 U.S. soldiers on the ground. And even when we listened to Steve Cohen, he had to say certain things, and there has been zero Russian people in there, none.
Yeah, Putin is not interested in having a war. The Black Ops are interested in having a war.
NATO's interested in having a war.
That's because...
And that's another thing that Steve Cohen said. He says there's some folks in NATO here and behind some of the military here that really want to, kick one up. Just kickstart it. They're just right chomping at the bit, and that has to do with behind the scenes. There is no way that the euro can survive.
Yes.
The deal that they are putting out.
The euro is a doomed currency, and
well, it was created to just take this whole thing down, and they can pretty much. Followed the formula of their own demise.
Yes.
What they did.
Keynesian economics, austerity does not work for any life forms in any civilization.
No, there's nobody that's ever made their way back to stability through austerity.
It is highly illogical to quote Spock.
Well, the eclipses are saying, too, that it could cause a domino effect. If Greece goes down, a lot of others are going to follow.
Oh, the whole thing goes down.
Yeah.
China's just like sitting there in la-la land, too. They lost 30% of their market in one day. Oh, my God. And it seems like, all of a sudden they made this absolutely miraculous turnaround today, and everybody would say, well, let's see how long this lasts, and then there's, is it Puerto Rico's bankrupt? And
72 B's, they gotta come up. That's B as in boy.
Yeah.
Right.
In the meantime, 40% of Greece's children are malnourished. This is supposed to be a first world country.
Yeah.
And they have that kind of malnutrition from not having enough of everything that they need. The amount of austerity that has been imposed on Greece when they did not really do this. Our little Hank Paulson did that by putting all of the wealth of Greece into the hedge funds, along with a few crony capitalist Greek politicians that were doing the bidding of the not so nice folks that we know about.
Bush, Clinton, crime family.
They just dumped it right down the drain. That's what they did. And they put it in their pockets. They hedge funded rollover the whole thing. And anyway.
Marina, it is not just our country that has hemorrhoids in leadership. I mean, bigger hemorrhoids.
Well, there's something called 13 families that uh-huh. are running their little tape loop on everybody else in the world. But,
right.
Rama, go ahead.
Because the time is short, on Tuesday I got a wild hair up my nose and I went up to the ski basin and set up my crystal thing, my platform with my cell phone battery and
copper wires hooking up the crystal grid with the battery.
Yes. And I just all of a sudden as I set it up there, I got the sense to just get horizontal on the ground and call the energies in and put my crown chakra where the crystals were pouring the energy out of. And I laid down for a moment, and it just seemed like a moment, you know, like a few seconds. And the next thing I knew was I was down this dirt road that is farther down the mountain. I was sitting in the drive.
It's a road that goes down the back side of the mountain.
Yeah.
And it's a very, very dirt road, skinny road. And it's gorgeous down there, but and the car was parked.
Yeah.
I was sitting. Somebody did something because he didn't do that.
I was sitting in the driver's seat. Tom the cat was sitting in the passenger seat.
All 12 feet of him, and he's getting pretty good at that passenger seat.
Yeah, and just said, dude, I got to show you something. So we got out of the car.
And he told you that he bi-located you. And
yeah.
It wasn't private up there, so.
Right, I was sort of exposed.
He just put you where there wasn't anybody.
That's right.
Nobody chose to go. You know, I mean, you got to know where to find that road, first of all.
That's right.
Much less know where it goes. And we've been back there before. But, then he had something, didn't he? A universal translator, you called it.
He had the equivalent of some kind of iPad.
But he said it had the abilities of a universal translator.
That's right. And he turned it on, and I saw Lady Master Nada at the Solar Tribunal talking live to an audience there. And they were discussing the upcoming frequency shifts that are going on with Earth and our particular sector of the Milky Way galaxy as things increase. And the way they're putting it is that it is like...
Well, you said that a holographic image showed up on the computer pad.
Yeah.
And he was witnessing a live council meeting of the Solar Tribunal with Lady Master Nada.
Yes.
On Saturn. And literally watching them discussing how Earth takes the next necessary quantum leap in evolutionary consciousness. And then right now with the astrology saying, as Jupiter moves on to 28 degrees Leo the first 10 days of August, that we could see very strong energies for Earth changes. There could be some internal flooding in the southern third of Florida. Only flooding coming directly up from under the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And that this is indicating that the landmass of the southern third of Florida is sinking as we speak. And as we go from this point through the rest of July, all of August and into September, the energies also are going to exponentially increase again in magnitude and frequency. And that let us remember that the first law of love is to be calm, to breathe and meditate, give equal time to the spirit of the age we are in, the zeitgeist of this time. Then on September 23rd, 24th, Mars will be at 0 degrees Virgo.
Mm.
This is now the degree of Regulus, the royal star of the lion.
And that's the blood moon
Virgo
coming.
Virgo is the sign of the goddess energy. A 2,160-year cycle of Virgo, the goddess, started on July 11th, 1991, taking us to the year 4151 AD. So we have been slowly integrating goddess love energy into the planetary sphere, and Mother Tita Licoria, the diamond one, is shining through. The whole gist of the message here is that the focus is on the new day.
Yes.
You know, there's plenty of stuff. You can see the old day going adios, and it's a trip. But it's to focus on the new day, We are actually living in the age of the sixth sun, beyond our original time of the fortunate fall.
Yes.
Where before that moment of the fall, we actually lived on a six-dimensional Earth long, long time ago in a galaxy not so far away. And we fell to a third-dimensional Earth. We chose to experience this, what it would be like to live in 3D. We have found out that it has taken a long, long time to raise the vibration of Earth to what it is now. And no turning back. Tom closed the vortex into the Solar Tribunal Council meeting going on Saturn. I packed up the crystal grid and the other crystals, put them away, put the battery back in my phone, and put the copper wires away. I turned around to say goodbye to Tom, and he had already vanished. The way Tom left it is as the energies continue to increase in magnitude and frequency, focus on positive stories, see the deeper messages that are coming from the people's hearts, right in the middle of all the news. Accountability, yes, yet to thine own self be true. Remember truth, simplicity, and love. See the goddess in all, for it is in giving that we receive. This is the way of the goddess. Application to detail. Go Bernie, he said. Go Bernie. Very soon you are going to see Bernie bringing in uplifting messages from the masters on Venus, as this is Bernie's planet of origin. Bernie knows Valiant Thor very, very well. He's in contact with Bernie. Bernie's
That's
in contact
right.
with Valiant Thor on a regular basis. And as you are able to connect with, I think on Netflix, you can pull Stranger at the Pentagon up and watch it. I know it's probably a couple dollars or something.
By
Craig Cambasso, our dear friend who comes and visits us here occasionally. So that was what Rama had in his experience to share with all of us on Tuesday, everybody. Yes, and you said that Nada was dressed in her white and purple robes.
Yes.
As the head of the Solar Tribunal on Saturn. This is really happening, everybody. This is really happening. This is not somebody's, imagination. This is not our imagination. This is really going on in this dimensional world that we live in.
And I will just say, the little glitch that happened yesterday, with United Airlines and the stock market and a few of the other...
What's that newspaper in New York? The Wall Street Journal also got shut down.
Yeah. I do not believe it was anonymous.
Well, you were told what it was.
That's right. And let's just say...
It was a little galactic, you might say... A taste for the 13 families.
Yeah.
Something coming that they aren't not very fond of having to look at.
That's right.
And, they're just saying we can shut you down anytime. And,
so it's basically just showing them that they're not in charge?
That's right.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
Well, one thing you're going to have to watch out for with these eclipses is that there's going to be the beginning of another Cold War. Not necessarily bad, but we might come to our senses for it in the USA.
That's already happening in the Ukraine. That's already going on, and it's now moving into a hot war. That's where they're heading. They want to stir up a hot war now. They're trying to kick it in gear. And Russia's not doing... Pardon?
It's hitting right on longitude and latitude of Russia. Russia's going to be very deeply affected by this. But
I can't understand.
Russia would be very deeply affected by it.
Right, and one of the things that could be a reoccurrence we have to watch out for, the U.S. spy plane was knocked out of the skies in 1961. It was a U.S. spy plane, or they were accused of being a spy plane. And that
yes,
happened.
I remember that. And this entire story about Russia, when full disclosure happens, the truth will come out about Mr. Putin and some of the agencies within Russia that have had to play very awful, very dirty games. And it is about the fact that they're in contact with at least five different cultures from the galaxy that only want to see peace. They do not want to see war. The Khazarian Nazi Bolsheviks over here that are the ones that are playing with this, you know, Babylonian money magic machine called fake money, debt. You know, IOU, currency called fiat money, which has no real value except when you blow it up like a balloon, it pops. The way I'm understanding.
Yeah, we're getting at the top of our hour. We need to have...
I passed talking.
Well, we just need to have him call our guest for the next hour. I've put the number up here, so whenever he arrives, why let me know, and we'll let Rama go ahead and talk until Don has time to call Michael. Okay, Rama.
Okay. Well, we were going to make a point because the King of Swords talked to Rama about bringing this really down to earth here. About Nasara again. He, you know, the Faction 2 reporting about Nasara and how it came into play is not what actually happened, although it's an acceptable cover story so that they wouldn't have to go where we needed, where they don't care to go in terms of what really happened. Just like they don't talk about what that so-called glitch, they called it a glitch in the news, and that wasn't exactly what it was.
Anonymous didn't do it. I was assured.
No. It was a galactic intervention.
That's right.
But anyway, late one evening on March 9th, this is the Faction 2 way it goes. A written March 9th, 2000, a written quorum call was hand-delivered by Delta Force and Navy SEALs to 15 members of the United States Senate and the United States House, who were sponsors and co-sponsors of Nasara. They were immediately escorted by the Delta Force and Navy SEALs to their respective voting chambers, where they passed the National Economic Security and Reformation Act. These 15 members of Congress were the only people lawfully allowed to hold office in accordance with the original 13th Amendment, and to remind everybody, the 13th Amendment in its original state of form said you may not hold a title of nobility. So everybody that takes the bar and becomes a lawyer, they take the title of nobility called Esquire. When they do that, they are automatically no longer a citizen of this country. They have no right to be holding any office of the land, nor may they work here. They may not make money here or anything. So remember, British soldiers destroyed copies of the Titles of Nobility Amendment, the 13th Amendment. They sometimes called it TONA, Title of Nobility Act. In the War of 1812, they destroyed the copies because it prevented anyone who had ties to the Crown of England from holding public office. Nasara is the most groundbreaking reformation to sweep not only this country, rather our planet in its entire history. The act does away with the Federal Reserve Bank, the IRS, the shadow government, and much, much more. Now, what really happened that the king was reminding everybody, yes, there were 15 individuals that spent 6 years together putting the Nasara bill together. And the fifth day, they originally said only 14, yet the 15th member of that group was Senator Barack Obama of Illinois. And Barack Obama was in on this deal too, even though he was not a senator or a member of the House at the U.S. federal level. He was a senator from Illinois. But what his position for being present was, is that since he's been 18, he's been the ninth council member, galactic council member of the Syrian Council of Nine, and has been attending all convocations there when they're called. He takes a little shuttlecraft and goes for a ride. And the King of Swords is very handy when that's necessary. But the point is that the entire Congress was escorted to a, as they put it, undisclosed location off the White House, where they were surrounded by the faction Three White Knights. And this place, the king made it very clear, was on his starship that he's been issued by the Ashtar Command since 1999, so that they were sitting there inside that starship with the White Knights Faction 3 with their phasers out. And they said, you will pass the Nasara's bill into law, the original one, the 250-page one, not the 75-page one that was whittled down by the Bush senior boy and put on two fake Nasara websites, Nasara.com and Nasara.org. Neither of those are valid statements. So the point is, they were all escorted there. Saint Germain was present, and he made a little soliloquy speech, and he said, "You're all being rounded up and held accountable this way, and you're completely aware that this is a galactic operation, and you know it. And the point is that you will be held accountable. Those of you who are guilty of intergalactic, you know, war crimes, you will be held accountable too. And for every move you make from this day forward, you will be held quadruple accountable, because you know what time it is. And that means you're making a decision and your fate is your own to make." And class now dismissed. I just wanted to make a point that it's been brought to our attention at this time, because something is about to change. Very, very much so. And so let's, and this is even more of an idea of why none of these other programs have anything to do with what time it is, because all that's canceled. This entire globe is going down all the way. All of its extenuating tendrils are all canceled. And we are rebooting, you might say, into the dimensional new earth, Tita Lacoria, the diamond one. And this is for divine governments on earth as it is in heaven. Do we have Michael on the phone?
Well, I just talked to Doug and he's getting him right now. So okay. I don't know what happened. But no.
Where are you?
Carlton no. From Georgia. Yeah, go ahead.
This team group that we have tonight.
Hi.
Has anyone ever figured out or heard heard an answer to this question? What did Greece use as collateral to get the money from the IMF?
No, Anna, we have somebody that's asking a question that's calling in. Just hold on with your thought. Let's see what Carlton wants to do here. Carlton.
Okay. Yeah, let's make it quick we have a guest and we're about 10 minutes late getting him on. So, Michael, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Hold on a minute.
Okay. Hang on just a minute. We got somebody trying to ask a question, and then we'll bring you in, Michael. So, Carlton?
Hi. Sorry for the confusion. Good to talk with you. I'm just trying to make sure I call the right number to be able to listen in. I don't have the right number or the right access code any longer, so sorry for this call.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What you need to call is 860-970-0300.
Yes. Is there an access code?
The same as it's always been, 8787-87#.
I thought this was after the 1st of July, and we've got a new number, Marita.
Okay.
Yeah. When I call that number, I'm not.
605-475-2090. And then the same PIN code, 8787-87#. And if anybody has any trouble hearing on that line, there's one more number. You write it down. It's always there. It's an emergency number for everybody to just listen only. And it's a BBS radio. You know, I might say it's a gift. And it's 716-748-0144. So keep both of those numbers
good,
in your book. Okay, good.
I've got that second one. Well, hey, I love you guys.
605-475-2090. Okay?
Thank you. I'll be listening. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for checking in, Carlton. Okay. Well, Michael King is online with us here, and he has spoken to us many times on many different subjects, and he's going to have a different one tonight than he has shared with us before. So, Michael King, please step forward and tell us what you've been working on.
Okay, well, thank you. I've been watching the shifts, and it's sort of like we're on the verge of a shift of the ages here. There is a cyclical conclusion happening between now and the end of September, and it's a cycle that is every 8.6 years that accumulates to 308 years, I believe. We're coming to the conclusion of one of the major cycles, and it's about to change in direction energetically. Starting October 1st, the instability on the planet, the chaos and tendencies around the world toward civil unrest, the lack of confidence in the government overall, and regime changes and so forth, these are all potentials in a big way. And it will continue on for several years this way. Between now and the end of September, some radical shifts could take place. And part of the urgency for us who are awakened enough to want to participate in a positive way to ensure that the path of this planet moves constructively. And that's what this group, I understand, is all about. And so I've been searching most of my life for what is the most effective ways to make a difference, both in areas of physical health and spiritual and mental health and so forth, but also in inner healing, which is the subject of tonight's talk, because I feel like it's time to reveal a method that I've found to be extremely powerful, in which you can obtain results in 1 or 2 minutes, noticeable results, permanent transformations of your inner self in a positive way. There's a lot of concepts that back up why and how this works, but the application alone, whether you understand all of those concepts or not, the principles that undergird its power, is less important than simply following the procedure. And so there are some phrases that I would like everyone to write down. So if you will, and you have access, grab some a pen and paper. There's four phrases that you'll be jotting down, and these phrases will be applied to practically anything and everything that you want to improve on in your life. Whether it's a memory, or whether it's an expectation, or whether it's a material condition, whether it's a relationship, or whether it's simply a physical disability, or something that's not feeling right inside. A fear. And I bring all these up because many of these emotions, everyone knows, we've been feeling them in increasing measures for lots of reasons. Some of them are purely dietary. Some of them are due to harp energies. Some are due to the change of the ages. Some are due to the simple uncertainty given the weirdness going on around life today. All right, it's understandable. And yet this method will allow you to experience improvements and complete resolution at some point, if not right away, in the way you feel. And that will propel you, or compel you, I should say, to take more constructive actions. It will set you free to take more constructive actions in solving the confounding issues that you might be faced, as an example, or addressing the physical health problem that's looming, or addressing your expectation of what global events are about to transpire. And addressing any fears associated to it, addressing any anger that could be related to the disclosures that are evidently that are happening in greater and greater measure as we speak. And so, I want to share these. There's phrases, and we're going to talk a little bit about the philosophy that makes these phrases so powerful. And if you're willing to apply them, you can see results in 1 or 2 minutes. That means you can experience a level of peacefulness, a level of serenity, and a level of calm greater than you've known in that subject matter possibly your whole life. And so, having a pen and paper is going to help. Taking a few notes regarding the philosophy will help. But keep these four statements and questions off to the side somewhere on a separate page so you can always go through them easily. Now, a little bit of background on this. I birthed in with a lot of challenges, physically, emotionally, spiritually, etc., economically, you name it. You know, I did this deliberately. I wanted something, I wanted many things to work on. I wanted to experience life on Earth, and I wanted to see what I could do to come up with answers that were, that the average person could relate to. And the only way to really do such things is if you grapple with the same kinds of problems. You know, you can't just go to school or take a seminar and expect to have an innate, in-depth, compassionate understanding of what another person's going through without having been there first. You know, I went through the military, but I didn't spend any time in Vietnam or Iraq or Afghanistan, or I didn't spend time in a war zone. And you know, when it came time for some of these old soldiers who had spent years in combat zones, and they're struggling, reeling with the impact of what they had to do, what they did, the nightmares, the terror, the guilt, shame, etc., etc. I was not qualified to address any of them because I hadn't been there. So that doesn't mean a method like this wouldn't work for them. It does. It works for anyone and under all circumstances, this method. However, it's not my place to advise someone who's been somewhere I haven't. And so in the areas that I have been, that's I can easily address because I can feel where another person has been, having been there. I can have compassion, and I can also be, detached, because I realize how much of my progress was simply the result of trudging through my own self-created scenario, situation, and making changes, making new choices, changing attitudes and beliefs. And I learned long ago that saying the words alone isn't going to cut it. You just can't get rid of a deeply seated resentment, or bitterness, anger, or fear just by repeating platitudes. And that's one of the reasons why affirmations alone are not very effective. However, you combine an affirmation with an in-depth understanding of the principles of life that undergird the power to make changes in yourself, and with phrases that are accurately structured to address things in a deep level way, at deep levels within your being, and do so with complete embracement of the issue that you are addressing, you can accomplish your success of relief from the angst and the fears and the resentments and bitterness and anger and all that in a matter of seconds. It doesn't take long, but there are some things that you want to know and to apply them, to add them into your method of addressing life issues. And so you may find this complementary with what you're already doing, or you may find it revelatory. And I'm going to share a few things that make it more powerful as well. It begins with understanding that life is a mirror. It's never not been anything but a mirror, that what you are seeing is nothing but yourself, that every experience in life, bar none, is none other than an aspect of you. And that's why the statement, we're doing it to ourselves, is so accurate. And if the self-seeking souls on this planet, who are seeking power and control over all others, understood that you're only doing it to yourself, they would quickly lay down their manipulative tools. It's just simple ignorance that causes people to seek self-interest at the expense of others. But don't think that this group is devoid of similar characteristics in minor, lesser ways, let's say. Every human being on the planet has these same characteristics to some degree. And the reason is simple. You're human. And so you have genetic strains. And so you are connected to all of humanity. And so there are times in which the self-serving nature, self-serving self-interest at the expense of others, does come forward in all of us. And as it does, we react in various ways. Some people try to suppress it. Some people try to heal it. Some people try to ignore it. Or some people try to really play it out. Okay, but it doesn't really matter. We're doing it to ourselves. And that's all there is to it. So without going into great details, because I believe this group understands that the world is a mirror. I'll just say, the first phrase that you want to admit, you want to acknowledge right off the bat when you're ready to deal with something, you're ready to transform it completely. You're done with it now. You've experienced it enough, and you want to completely resolve this. The first statement is, I own this reflection. I own this reflection. You're looking at the instance. You're looking at that person over there who just treated you badly or just did something you don't like. And the statement that you say as you are observing that experience, whether it's a memory or an actual one in the moment, I own this reflection. I own this reflection. To understand that what we are experiencing in life, we are projecting into existence, so we don't see something that we haven't put out there. It doesn't show up for us. And so that's why we are, everything that we experience is a reflection. It is because it is a projection of our inner selves, a projection of our inner selves. We are the projector. So by letting that sink in at a very deep level within your being, that we are the projector of everything that happens to us, and that the world is just reflecting it back. If you allow that to sink in without guilt, shame, blame, just allow it to sink in, it will set you free. And by owning the reflections, you are taking the very first, most important step to resolving those issues forever and being free of their enslavement, their enchainment in your life. I own this reflection. Now, it only takes a second to say that and to contemplate the reality that life is a mirror. Second phrase takes this to another level. You ask yourself, is this who I choose to be? Is this who I choose to be? You're looking at that other person over there that previously you might have judged, you might have resented, you might have labeled in some fashion or another. And you ask yourself, is this who I choose to be? Now, you say, first of all, anyone who's trying to avoid blame, avoid responsibility as the projector of events in their lives, we're all doing it to ourselves, and we'll think, oh my God, that person can't possibly be me. They're doing something I would never think of. And yet, they have yet to grasp the depth of this, the truth that life is a mirror. Has never been otherwise and cannot be anything other than that. And we'll go into that based on unconditional love, why that is true. We'll do that a little later. Is this who I choose to be? It could be something inside of you, a memory, a feeling that comes up that you're, man, I did that, I said that, I acted this way. Man, you know, when I was young, you didn't know better. Is this who I choose to be? You're older and wiser now, but asking the question makes a difference inside. That makes you feel uncomfortable 10, 20, 30, 40 years later is still bothering you because it's stuck. It's an imprint. It is a belief system that is frozen in place because guilt surrounds it, because fear envelops it, and because belief systems support it anchoring into your personality and not changing. And there is, and it's like, how do you set yourself free from something that does not want to change inside yourself? You look at it, you stuff it, you ignore it, you look at it again, it comes up in an argument or something at some point in time. But it continues to bother you until certain procedures have been performed. And then it ceases to bother you altogether. And those procedures can, in this case, take as little as 1 or 2 minutes. And you will forever be set free of this thing that might have bothered you for 20 years. Under the covers, under the deeper levels, but not every day, just sort of a subcurrent attitude, belief, feeling, whatever. So when you ask the question, or almost any question about something, there is a magical thing that happens to whatever it is you're focusing on. The stuck imprints interacting with a question, they suddenly start to open their receptive centers. Previously closed, locked down, tight, bound together, unavailable for change, for new light, for new insights. This is who and what I am, and there's no way I can change this kind of attitude. That's the way these imprints are, and they're stuck. Until you do a few things that this process will allow you to do. And one of them is you're giving loving presence. You're giving presence to that old memory, that feeling inside, that experience. You're giving presence. You see, denial and avoidance has always been the problem causing us to repeat, repeat, repeat. Not just for year after year, but lifetime after lifetime. So we're dealing with something here that can stop the cycle of repetition in a matter of 1 or 2 minutes. And it begins by owning the reflection and asking a question. Is this who I choose to be? Now, why does it matter? Not matter if it's in the past or in the present. It doesn't matter. Or in the future. Because time, all time is simultaneous. So as long as you're still, repeating a cycle of an old pattern, making a similar choice that you made 10 years ago that isn't serving you, 20 years ago, whatever, it's not serving you, then there's something stuck. And you can change that by asking a question, by following, these are laws of nature, by the way. You're following laws of nature. You're asking a question, what happens? You're giving it loving presence, so what happens? The receptive centers of that imprint start to open up and receive new light, new insights, new understandings, new perceptions. It's automatic. It happens in a matter of seconds. So I'm explaining this in a very drawn-out way, but it actually happens in a matter of 5 seconds. Is this who I choose to be? Now, it's very important that when you ask this question that you do not answer the question intellectually. Do not say, yeah, yes, no, maybe, well. Okay? You don't answer the question intellectually. Just notice the many places inside that are related to the question and feel something while you're holding the question in mind. So you ask the question, is this who I choose to be? And then feel something. You don't answer it. You just feel something. Do you notice that you kind of scan your whole inner self? And you may notice some tension spots or some blowout spots, or you may notice some things that are related to this experience, that you, how your body reacts. And all you want to do is observe all of those different variances and feel something. And you will notice in a matter of 5 seconds or less, things start to change. They start to shift. There's a relaxation. There's an opening. There's an expansion. Just by asking the question, is this who I choose to be? Now, you can follow that up with something more profound and more transformative. But it was necessary to ask that question in order to open the receptive centers. And to put yourself in a position where you're taking responsibility. That's why you say, I own this reflection. You're taking responsibility as the projector or cause of your reality. And then you're beginning to work on the issues, what you would like to change. And so you ask this, you make the statement, I own the reflection. You ask the question, is this who I choose to be? And then you ask another question after you've felt something. The question is, third question, what is the true nature of life in moments like this? What is the true nature of life? That's a capital T, capital N, capital L, the true grand nature of life in moments like this. Now, again, you do not answer the question intellectually. You just contemplate the true nature of life as you also contemplate the life experience you've been focusing upon. I think we have somebody in a squeaky chair in the background. Maybe you could mute yourself. Thank you. Again, don't answer the question intellectually. Just contemplate the true nature of life as you also contemplate the life experience you've been focusing on. Now, the reason why you contemplate on both, and it's not that hard to do, is that you want to merge the true nature of life into your present moment of memory or whatever you're focusing on. So this is like bringing heaven to earth, and this is why it's so powerful and it's so immediately transformative at the highest level. What is the true nature of life in moments like this? And we'll talk about what that means in a second. And as what we're doing here is the opposite. We're doing the opposite of what has caused us to stay stuck. What caused us to stay stuck in a repetitive pattern or not be able to relinquish our fear, our angst, our worry, our stress, our bitterness, our resentment, whatever, is because we were not willing to receive new insight. And why? Usually because we judge ourselves. Remember, we're doing it all to ourselves. So we judge ourselves. If we judge another, we've just judged ourselves. We just criticize another, we've just criticized ourselves. Okay, and so we harbor that inside. It's an imprint. We create an imprint inside when we do that. And it's stuck until we, and when we notice that we've done this bad thing, supposedly, we've judged ourselves or someone else, and then we don't want to admit it to ourselves. We don't want to take responsibility. So we're doing the opposite here. We're taking responsibility, and we are choosing, making new choices. And so we are questioning everything. You question your old paradigm. Your old paradigm has gotten you where you are, and you're saying now that you want to go somewhere different. Well, you have to question your old paradigm. It doesn't mean you're going to get rid of everything. But you may find that even some good things are not exactly in perfect alignment with the true nature of life. Once you begin to understand what the true nature of life really is. There was once upon a time that our society believed that bigotry was the way to go. There's religious bigotry. There's racial bigotry. There's political bigotry. There's scientific bigotry. You know, it's like you're supposed to be some, you know, part of a sect, a group, a religion, a denomination, And somehow this misunderstanding about the true nature of life, that God would judge everybody except those who are in this particular sect or had this particular scientific understanding, like evolution or creationism. You know, that you need to have a judgment about all those opinions, and that you need to divide yourself from everyone else. Well, as we begin to wake up to the true nature of life, we realize there's only one of us. What is there to divide? Creationism and evolution, who's to say that they aren't harmoniously compatible with one another? Dividing means you're always separating. You're saying that this half of the coin doesn't really fit together with the other half of the coin, but the truth is there's only one of us, and so the two halves of the coin actually do fit together. They're part of each other. Who's to say the differences aren't complementary? What's the purpose of bigotry? Think about it. In the true nature of life, there's no such thing. It doesn't exist, because it's well known in the true nature of life that there is only one of us, and all differences are complementary. We just need to figure out how to fit the puzzle together to work in the most advantageous manner for everyone concerned. It's not that difficult. It's not rocket science here. It's willingness to change our perception that changes the world. And we have to make that change inside ourselves if we are going to see a change in our world. My world is going to change to the degree that I change my perceptions, because the world is but a mirror. That's it. It's my mirror. The world is my reflection. I have to own that reflection. And then I need to start questioning things. Is this who I choose to be? Well, what is the true nature of life in moments like this? Well, what is the true nature of life? My perspective about the underlying fundamental truth of life in the big capital L kind of way is that unconditional love is at the core of it all. That the laws of nature are based on unconditional love. That there cannot possibly be a victim for that reason. If there were, the true nature of life would not be based on unconditional love. Now, that's kind of paradigm shifting for some, because who have an invested interest in victimhood. But nevertheless, it's a fact of life. And if there's anything we could do to change that, I don't think it would serve our best interest to do so. But it is to try to understand our life experiences in light of the fact that victims cannot exist. Why? Because free will does exist. And so we have... Okay, now, do we have aspects of unconditional love? You know, variable aspects? Yes. There's different parts, different ways of putting unconditional love pieces together. What is some defining cornerstones, you could say, of unconditional love? One of them is free will, and I call it infinite creative freedom within the bounds of natural law. It doesn't mean that, you know, we're in a big sandbox and we can just go anywhere, like jump off buildings and fly. No, within the bounds of natural law. When you learn to levitate, yes, you can jump off buildings and fly, because that's a higher law. But within the bounds of natural law, you have infinite creative freedom. And then you say, well, wait a minute. Big Brother is saying I don't have the freedom, because I've got to, you know, I can't just go out and go do what I want, because I've got to pay the rent. I've got to work at a job and make enough money to pay the rent. Well, hello, didn't you sign up for this experience? I mean, didn't you walk into a room in which money was the means of exchange when you birthed in? Okay, you gave the free will choice to walk into a planet in which money is used as a medium of exchange. You know, money isn't used except in the lowest levels of evolution in social orders. In the higher levels, they don't use money. Of course not. That's absurd. Everyone is intently focused on the common good. And so people just work toward that end out of joy. And everyone's needs are supplied. But, and you don't need money in a situation like that. You have natural law that helps keep things in order. And so, okay, so we're at the bottom of the evolutionary chain here on this planet because we still use money and we still use violence to resolve disputes. And so that puts us very low on the totem pole of evolution. But for those of us who are here to evolve, to progress, we're going to experience this strange way of doing business in the universe, and we're going to cope with it, and we're going to own the reflection because there's only one of us, and we're all it. It doesn't matter if we get it right or wrong. It doesn't matter if we make a lot of mistakes or not. It doesn't matter if we're low in the totem pole or high in the totem pole, evolutionary-wise. There's only one of us, and we're all it. So there's no reason to judge it, but there is every reason to participate in it, to awaken aspects of us, other parts of us, our shadowed brothers, to awaken and enlighten us, parts of ourselves, and those other selves out there, to awaken them to the true nature of life. And what is another aspect of the true nature of life? Unconditional innocence. The unconditional innocence of all life. Now, that's a tough one for a lot of people. The unconditional innocence of all life, no matter who you are, no matter where you've been, no matter what you've done. Are you telling me that there is no such thing as judgment and guilt, and God's not going to slam us into hell someday because we didn't get it right, or we didn't believe us in some particular set of beliefs or persons? That there is the unconditional innocence of all life, even the worst of us? Unconditional innocence of all life? Can that really be? Think about it. I'm saying this so that you can contemplate whether or not this is really true. And you can understand, you can grapple with, what is the true nature of life? So when you ask the question, what is the true nature of life in moments like this issue that I'm grappling with right now inside? This old memory, this resentment, this bitterness, this unhappiness, this thing I did when I thought, you know, when I was drunk or when I was didn't know better, when I was so lividly angry because I had issues with mom or dad. And now my partners, I'm taking it out on them. You know, you're dealing with these things, and you're remembering these things, and you're say, what do I, you know, how do I change this? Well, what is the true nature of life in moments just like this? Now you're doing the right thing. You're giving presence to your unhappiness, to the thing that's bothering you, rather than denial and avoidance, which is the cause of the problem, has always been the cause of the problem. You're not going to stuff it, and you're not going to try to get too religious or superior spiritually for it. You're going to give loving presence to it. That's part of the true nature of life also. Unconditional loving presence. Unconditional loving presence. Well, that's part of unconditional love, isn't it? Unconditional loving presence. Who and what are you not present with if you have no judgment on them? You separate yourself when you judge them. And when you judge them, you've just judged yourself, so you've separated a part of yourself away. That's called fragmentation of the soul. And that fragment goes out as a projection. This is why I say that everything in your life is a projection. That fragment goes out as a projection. It's your soul, it's your consciousness that goes out as a projection because you've denied it. You think it's not you. You don't want it to be you. You don't want that anger and fear to be you. So you project it out away from you. And it takes on a life. And it turns into another being, takes on a body, comes back and attacks you. Or plays out whatever it is that you are afraid of, or whatever it is that you were denying, or whatever it is you wanted to avoid. Your projection goes out, takes on life, energy, and comes back and slaps you in the face. And that's why when something outside of you comes and happens to you, you have to ask yourself, is this who I choose to be? Do you see the connection here? Do you see why this is so powerful? Because no longer are you denying the reality that the world is nothing but a mirror, and I've only done this to myself, and I'm only seeing myself come back to me. I projected this experience out there, and it's come back to show me what it is so that I can address it. That when I see and feel nothing but beauty coming back to me of its own accord, not because I'm denying everything but that, but because I see loving presence and beauty and balance and harmony come back to me, it's because that's living inside. That's not the kind of thing you need to heal. You can take it to new levels if you want by healing deeper parts of your being, but you know that means that you're progressing. That means that you have healed something, that you really are evolving. The joy is more a part of your daily life. That addictions go away. You don't need external supports as much as you have it coming from within. And you make common sense decisions better because you're not bound by all these imprints. You're not chained by them to repeat and repeat and repeat. You're free. Because you begin to understand what the true nature of life really is like. Number one, you could never be guilty of anything, and neither can anybody else. And to the degree that you recognize there's nothing to forgive, and you're not just intellectually. You got to get to understand there's a difference. Oh, I'm just going to deny the fact that I'm pissed off at you because you did this to me, and I'm just going to say, well, there's nothing to forgive. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about owning the reflection at a deep level inside of me and asking, is this who I choose to be? And then remembering the unconditional innocence of all life in a moment like this. This is reality. This is grounded in truth. This is facing the obvious. This is facing what we have created. Okay? This is being present with a piece of us that we projected out there to show us our inner self. This is doing something that is so powerful, it heals in a matter of seconds. When you combine a realization, a remembrance, an awareness of the true nature of life to memories, emotions, imprints, experiences, projections, etc., in a matter of seconds, they transform. Why? Because you have the free will to transform them. But you have to follow the laws of nature to get it done right, where it won't bother you again. These principles fulfill the law. And that's why one of the undergirding principles that make unconditional love unconditional and loving is that it completely lives by and fulfills the exacting laws of nature. The exacting laws of nature. They are no respecter of persons, meaning they're not going to give you any leniency. They're not going to say, oh, you've been a nice person. I'll just make this law of nature, like the law of gravity, not work for you so you can not hurt yourself when you act stupid and fail to watch where you're going. No, we have to learn through trial and error. Sometimes it hurts, even if we are an infant. And that's how we learn to watch out, learn how to walk through stumbling, falling. We learn spiritually by making mistakes. We learn in relationships by getting it wrong first and then realizing how best to get it right. So there's nothing wrong with that. If you condemn yourself for getting it wrong, believe me, you'll never get it right because you can't. You'll be fighting that imprint for the rest of your life and the next life and the next life until you finally get it right, which means you remember your innocence. Just because you made a mistake didn't mean you were guilty. Just because somebody else makes a mistake in your life doesn't mean they're guilty. It also doesn't mean it is without consequence. There are exacting laws of nature that impact us. There are emotional laws, there's spiritual laws, there's physical laws, laws of aerodynamics, laws of gravitation, levitation, laws of awakening and enlightenment. The exacting laws of nature apply to everyone all the time. You work with them or they're going to hurt you. It's to the rule. Good, bad, and different personalities, it doesn't matter. We're all subject to the exact same laws. And it's a good thing, too, because those laws are the very laws we're using right now to set ourselves free and to create our reality the way we want it. If those laws were changed for people, you could never trust them. But you have something very solid, secure, and permanently the same. It's the exacting laws of nature. You can trust in that. You've got to figure out how to work with them, and you can make anything happen. You have infinite creative freedom within the bounds of natural law to make your world happen the way you want it. Do you know there are societies who know how to completely regenerate a body? But how do they do it? Magic? There's no such thing as magic. There's laws of nature, and you can do it within the laws of nature. Of course you can. Do we know how to do it on this planet, in this evolutionary state? Well, to some degree, but not enough to save us from possibly dying of some kind of disease someday, or having the disability we now have and notice, or aging the way we do on this planet. Okay, well, we just don't understand the laws of nature that to that degree, so we don't get the results. Does it mean that we're bad? Does it mean we're guilty of something so we've been judged to cast onto this hellhole of a planet? Because we don't know how to regenerate the body or some other reason that we invent imaginarily? Like, you know, we're here in this hellhole, but, you know, I must have done something wrong. You didn't choose to be here, right? I mean, of course you chose to be here. You chose to be here for good reasons. Maybe it's helping your evolution. Maybe it's to help others. Maybe it's just to feel more compassion for those who are not like you. There's only one of us.
It's 8:00.
And we're all it. What we do to ourselves. That's a law of nature, and nobody escapes that. There are many who want to say that that person over there is less than I am. But it's just you. And that's what causes this elitism and this spiritual aloofness and this bigotry in denominations and sects of religion. And that's how the priests have been controlling us. And that's why they tell us the lies, and we believe it. That we need somebody like a mediator, like a priest, or somebody else to intermediate between us and God. Well, that's just not true. The laws of nature apply to you. and me exactly where we are. We don't need an intermediary. It's nice to have a mentor, someone who's been there before us, because you can go a little faster. But it's all inside of you. You don't really need them if you just go home, sit quiet, follow the what's common sense in the laws of nature, like give loving presence where you have not given that before, where you were denying or rejecting. You know, just reverse all these things. You're going to get results whether anybody taught you that or not. And many of you already have. Many of you already know this because you sat enough time in quiet meditation, not avoiding, but looking and feeling into things, and you realize, oh, my God, that works. Well, of course it works. It works because it fulfills the law. So you cannot escape unconditional love at the core of the universe without acknowledging the fact that there are exacting laws of nature and that you're subject to them and that there's only one of us. And we're all it. So what we do to ourselves. That's why we own the reflection, number one. And then you ask, is this who I choose to be? This thing I'm seeing in front of me, this thing I feel inside, is this who I choose to be? Don't answer the question, just feel something. Notice where it lives inside of you. Just notice it, that's all. And meanwhile, you go on to the next question. What is the true nature of life in moments like this? What is the true nature of life in moments like what I'm feeling inside? See, now because you're asking questions, the imprint is opening up and say, wait a minute, I'm open to new light now because, you know, you're questioning my existence. You're questioning the belief that made me the way I was, like an imprint. What is the true nature of life in moments like this old imprint? And then you start comparing notes. Well, you don't answer that question. You just start to feel. You're back. You feel the true nature of life. And what happens is you just kind of, it helps you to just expand. Literally, it's just an expansion. And you're sensing the true nature of life. You're not intellectually identifying it. You're sensing the true nature of life. And that's where the healing lies. That's where the power is. It's not an intellectual thing, that's the point. It's an experience. When you experience the true nature of life, a new light, a new exchange is taking place at the level of your imprints, and they are transforming, and then at this point you have to breathe deep breaths, at least three specifically, deep breaths. You have to breathe. Breathe. And you breathe until the charges of that old imprint, the electromagnetic house that you constructed by holding a belief system a certain way that was in error, starts to release the old, because it's got new light, it's no longer the same imprint, it's no longer the same belief. You've brought in, without even intellectually understanding all the facets, you've brought in some portion of the true nature of life, and it's transformed in a matter of seconds this imprint, and is causing the old electromagnetic house that it was that surrounded it to release, to dissipate into the electromagnetic fields of life, to be like dust to dust, and it disappears eventually. And you breathe it out. Breathe it out with sound if you really want great success in this area. And if you're alone, it doesn't bother anybody. But just breathe, deep breaths, three of them. You will notice, in some cases, if it's a deep core, you're going to get kind of buzzy. You're going to feel tingly sensations in the tips of your fingers and feet. You're going to feel kind of lightheaded, bubbly. You might need to yawn a lot. Not to worry. That's part of the process. You're releasing. You're noticing your whole body's going to start calming down. The tension spots are going to move. You may need to breathe more than three times, but at least three. You may need to breathe 10 or 12. But you will notice at some point you won't want to breathe because you will be in such a state of peace and quietness and stillness and serenity that even breathing is uninteresting and not necessary. Until it is, which it will be at some point. So you'll notice that you just healed whatever that was. Something's changed inside. You will notice that you won't have the same charges on whatever that experience was like you did 60 seconds ago, because it takes about 60 seconds to do this when you do it right. And the breathing is what takes the longest. And that's where the healing actually consolidates part of it. When you asked about the true nature of life, what is it in moments like this, you are actually asking, that's causing you to go back and have a new awareness, then that's what's changing your reality. Okay, that's what's doing the healing. It's that new information going into an old imprint that's changing everything. That's where the healing takes place, because now you have a whole new electromagnetic house around that whole experience. That's why you no longer have a charge on it. So no longer you feel differently about it. So you act differently. You say differently. Everything changes about it. And you don't need to think about it. It just happens automatically. It's permanent, by the way. You permanently feel more joy in that area to some degree or another. You may have to take it to new levels, because there's probably more than one layer, or this is, you know, every breath you're releasing layers. There's probably more than three layers associating to this. And so you move it until you're completely at peace, until you find another level, another issue, another memory or something, the next level, the next tight spot in the gut or head or wherever, in the heart. But there's one more thing you can do if you want to take it to a new level, and it will consolidate. You'll see even deeper peace and even greater resolution. And it takes a little more understanding to understand why this last phrase, this fourth one, actually works so well. But I'm just going to give it to you, and maybe won't say much because I think we're running out of time here. The last fourth phrase is called, I forgive this projection of my inner self. I forgive this projection of my inner self. I forgive this projection of my inner self. Now, you're not forgiving another person, and that's the very important concept here. You're not to forgive someone for wrongdoing, because that makes them guilty. And we all understand now that there's only the unconditional innocence of all life at play. That's the only thing there is. The rest of it's illusion. So they can't possibly be guilty. So you're not going to forgive them for messing up your life or doing some bad thing or making you a victim, because they didn't. They didn't, because there's only one of us, and you've only done this to yourself, and they are projecting just what's inside of you. So you caused those events to happen, and that's a lot of responsibility, especially when it hurts so bad. And you want to play the victim really, really bad to avoid responsibility, which is really what that's about. Okay, that's violating the laws of nature. And so the bad, the pain, the misery, the guilt, the shame, everything continues this life, next life, etc. Why? Avoiding personal responsibility for whatever you experience. Avoiding and denying. Casting blame, wanting to play the victim, and then you flip over to the perpetrator in the next life. And it happens. That's the law. Until you forgive, but you forgive yourself, you forgive the projection of your inner self that caused the experience to happen in your reality. The world is a mirror. If you forgive for under those premises, I think, if you forgive in that way, you will set yourself free, and you will notice a deep calming inside, a deep settling inside. And you want to breathe some more when that happens. You want to breathe until you feel completely at peace inside, until you feel the serenity that you haven't felt before there, until you feel joy to some degree, until you feel grateful for having experienced whatever that was because of how what it's taught you and how you have learned how there really is only one of us. And you really did do this to yourself. And that in that oneness, you know, all of these experiences have their place. They're complementary. They're helping each other, each of us, to progress along the path of our choosing. Remember, infinite creative freedom, yet within the bounds of natural law. You're progressing along the way that is right for you. Everything that you experience is in alignment with your free will and your purposes. You did walk into the room with the furniture the way it was. You didn't necessarily put all that furniture there, but you projected images that of yourself onto them. And so you're seeing only yourself in that furniture, and I'm talking about the world in front of us. So you own the reflection, and you ask yourself, is this who I choose to be? Because you can choose to be anything. You can choose to be enlightened. You can choose to be mad. You can choose to be a victim, or you can choose to be triumphant. You can choose to be physically whole. You can be spiritually adept. But then you got to fulfill the law, you know, and work at it until you get there and practice at it until it's all, you know, you really realize it. It comes real easy when you use a method like this. And then you ask, what is the true nature of life in moments like this? And you remember the unconditional love, the unconditional innocence, the infinite creative freedom, the unconditional loving presence, and the exacting laws of nature, those four things. That's the unconditional innocence of all life, the infinite creative freedom within the bounds of natural law, that's your free will, unconditional loving presence, you give loving presence to everything, it heals. And the exacting laws of nature, those four things. And then you say, I forgive this projection of my inner self. And then, you know, realize there was nothing to forgive because there's only innocence. And you're forgiving yourself here to set yourself free. But in reality, there was nothing to forgive. That means you held yourself in chains unnecessarily. That was the illusion that you believed. But you just set yourself free by forgiving it. And then eventually you realize there never is anything to forgive, and so you completely set yourself free of the illusion of guilt, fear, shame, judgment. But to the degree that you tackle these issues is to the degree that your personal inner world transforms into something more according to what you choose it to be. And thus is a whole powerful inner healing method. It works in about 60 seconds to accomplish it. Unless you need to breathe longer, it might take 2 minutes. To get a deep level, deep-seated transformation, a permanent recreation of some aspect of yourself inside. Does it take time to apply? Will you ascend if you do this for 2 minutes? No, of course not. Yes, it takes time. I used to spend 5, 10, 15 hours a day when I first figured out the earlier versions of what I'm sharing with you now. I didn't have this kind of powerful approach because I didn't understand all those things. I just intellectually had a knowledge. But this has become very real to me, as you can probably tell, because I've applied this hundreds of thousands of times to various areas of my life. And you know what? One of the great secrets to making your world work the way you want it to is inner clarity. Inner clarity. Do you want a better world? Then spend the time to get inner clarity. That means transform your guilt, shame, judgments, fears, everything, until you see the true nature of life and you live it. Let it express from you freely to the degree, and we don't have to get it perfect in this lifetime, But to the degree that we apply these understandings is to the degree we set ourselves free, and we can create phenomenally in the way we want. We can just project our images. And life, the laws of life will form them in front of us, just like our former projections of negativity formed a negative experience. Our new projections of positivity will form a positive experience. And so I'm saying this because we're in the midst of a change on Earth. We're about to experience some radical shifts. And there's a lot of fear things that are going to happen or could happen unless we, the people, decide that we want to experience something other than that. This is why I'm sharing this tonight. I feel like it's an urgent call. Marita called me. I said, this is perfect. The timing is perfect because I believe this is an urgent message that every light worker who cares about this planet and their own existence needs to know how to quickly transform inner aspects. When you start to see something dark and unhappy in the world, this method, starting with I own this reflection, you can no longer blame the bad guys out there, okay? I own this reflection. Starting with that, you can make a change in the world. To the degree that one person changes, it is to that degree that the power of the dark side, the dark side that believes in guilt and creates this illusion out there for us to believe in or not, is to the degree that they are lessened, they are weakened in their power, because we're feeding them with our anger, our fear, our resentment, whatever. Okay, we're feeding them. We're causing them to exist. And as soon as you withdraw your creative energy for them, you take it back to yourself and you create something more positive, a beautiful scene comes about. And they are weakened because they feed on the fear energy, negativity, etc. They need the negativity. But what happens if someone calls a war, nobody shows up because we're too busy, you know, tending our garden or believing in something else more important? It's because it will happen to the degree that we, the people, and we got a lot of people, but there's enough light workers to make a difference. It's just that a lot of the light workers are still caught up. And so we, the people, have to change ourselves in order to stop being caught up so that we can set free ourselves first, and then in that way we set free the world. That's why we shared this tonight. So I hope you're able to make good use of this and add your power.
Well, thank you, Michael. This is I have been on this same journey and experiencing some things that I wasn't happy with, and knowing that, okay, I have asked myself so many times, why am I projecting this on? And but the questions, how to get it removed, I think is a part that maybe hadn't gotten as deeply into as what you have. So
mm-hmm.
I think this would be a good thing to review and remind people of. You know, one time going over this is wonderful, but this is, it seems to me that this is something that we could use. How could we do this as a reminder or as a follow-up in upcoming weeks to, you know, just to really get it so that we all get it?
I would be willing, that's a very good question, Marita, and I would be willing to entertain a second call after, you know, a couple weeks of people putting this to practice, whoever wants to, and then just do a Q&A time.
That's what I was going to suggest, maybe a question and answer, and people talk about their experiences, and maybe something that someone comes up with, maybe that, you know, it's just a key or a clue that would be helpful to someone else, so... Because, you know, what you're speaking about is exactly, and we hadn't talked about this between each other. I mean, it's exactly what I've been working on myself. So it's that's interesting as well. There's only one of us.
Yeah. It's
Well, we are so grateful that you've shared this part of your... now, you want to give... Michael has also talked with us about the herbs and things that he has, and also that he does consultations. Do you want to give that information in case people would like to connect with you?
Sure.
Or the
and
website?
I have been, yes. And I have taken people through this very process in private consultation. More, you know, it's happening more and more. But I'm sharing it with you freely so that, because everyone needs to know how to do this, and then we'll tweak, we can tweak it, you know, in the future. But because there, so much of the work is going to be done by you anyway, on your own. Mm-hmm. But I'm happy to take people through the really tough ones. I show you that the very worst experience that you've ever had in life, the thing that's still bothering you, we can look at and see progress within 2 minutes, especially if you already have the fundamentals that we just shared. And, okay, so just you're free to give a call. I do sessions. There's a cost to them. You just set it up with Julie. She'll fill you in on all the info and, you know, how to set it up. Anyway, the number to call is 541-482-9633. That's 541-482-9633. And if you want some background information, you can go to my website. It's called Vitality Herbs and A-N-D, clay.com. Vitality Herbs, plural, A-N-D, clay.com. And then go to the center. There's a blue bar with some links at the top. Go to the center when it says Vital Health News Archives. Look, go to the archives section, and there's about 100 articles. But look for the ones called the Blessing Transformation, and right around that one, you got to scroll down. It might be on page 2 or 3. I don't know, but look for that one, the Blessing Transformation, and another one called Emotion Packed Imagery. Emotion Packed Imagery: How to Manifest Material Dreams and Desires and Things Like That. Those two articles. There's about 6 or 8 inner healing type archives and audio files that fit them. So you can, they give you some background information. You're welcome to peruse those. It's all free. In the meanwhile, what you have just experienced tonight has really been the culmination since 1993 when I first figured out the big aha. Okay, so this is how I did. I've been creating all this. I can change it at will. I'm the cause. I can change it. And this mm-hmm. is the sort of like the refined version of what I went through since 1993. So feel free, experience it for a couple of weeks. I'm happy to come back if whatever your next available date is around then. And then we can compare notes, and you can tell me about your experiences and ask questions or help to refine it or whatever. I would really enjoy that.
Well, we are so grateful. And this is something, as I say, the two of us haven't talked, but it's like I've been working on it. And it's interesting just to observe that... and the reminder that we are all one, and sometimes we... do the same thing. So, well, thank you so much, Michael, and we will look forward to seeing you, and we'll get you booked back in again here. So,
okay, super. We'll be talking soon.
Grateful. Okay. Now, since it's as late as it is, maybe we won't take a musical break, and I'll just turn it back over to Tara and Rama so that they can finish whatever we want to do with the hard news or whatever inspirational things that they might have for this. For the last 45 minutes here or so. So, Tara and Rama, are you there?
Yes. Greetings. Oh. We are. I was just going over the last little while, and there was one very special event, you know, that happened the last couple of weeks, and it was that John Stewart had Malala on his show. It was right at the time of what had happened here in South Carolina, in Charleston. But she was just talking about her growing up years and her brothers and
She had two.
Maybe you should tell people who Malala is.
Oh, Malala was a girl, number one. That's very important. She was a girl. She's 17 right now, so she's a beautiful woman. She was shot twice. One in the head and one in the neck, in the back of the neck, and by a quote unquote member of a Taliban group in northern Pakistan. Don't remember the actual name of the town, and she was taken to actually all the way to London and to a special hospital and. Well, I'm sure they made that decision after. A certain amount of time definitely went by to get to go straight over there. It was just pretty miraculous that she survived such a deadly force. She ended up winning a Nobel Peace Prize for this year. She became the Peace Laureate. Mm-hmm. She has been speaking and, traveling, and her main message is education for girls, mm-hmm. in a very large, a largest way, you might say, which has definitely, I've been watching various, things that are going on, different ideas of putting kids together with projects to spread that idea that an education for a girl, you know, can educate the whole very next generation. And that's right. Well, I guess I brought all of that up in the sense that finding again how to turn something that's maybe sour lemon into lemon juice or something, to how to make something positive out of a not so inspiring moment in our history. And I would just say that the young lady who climbed up the pole to go after the Confederate flag and quoted a whole verse, I forgot which biblical text she was quoting, but basically in the name of the Lord, that they would be taking this flag down. I don't remember the whole words, but it turns out that this young woman is not just in one field talented. She is talented in so many ways. She created her own song for freedom and sang it a cappella on Amy Goodman when she got had her interview with Amy. She's been, devoting her life to inspiring the education of girls, women too, and in terms of the way to move forward and lead in the manner in which the times are calling for. To make these changes. This evening, I didn't know what to do. I just, Tom Hartman has a way to invite some of the most challenging characters to come on his shows, and he just did it this time. He had, what was his name? David Duke, former head of the Ku Klux Klan and, Grand Negus or whatever. I'm just sitting there. He let him espouse to the rules, and evidently General Lee was against slavery, and he actually freed all his slaves, Robert E. Lee. And at the same time, he said, you can't say the same thing for Thomas Jefferson, can you? And I was just like, I was just sitting there going, oh, my goodness sakes. And no, I mean, he's a slave trader. Thomas Jefferson sold slaves in the northern sections of the country, out of Boston, I think, or something. He got chewed out by St. Germain, Robert says. although he definitely skewed history along the way, he got out of line, to say the least. But this is just a deep subject, is it not, everyone? And to talk about, there's an article that was talking about the heartlessness of the protocols of the European Union in terms of you may not be a member unless you are under 3% in debt, and you can't have any more than that. And Greg Palast came on Tom Hartman yesterday too, and he said Germany has been cheating for every second of every minute of every day of the week. They're never under 3%, and they just keep on going. Same thing with France. France just gave the finger, and said, this is our budget, and yeah, it's going to be 7.5%, and what are you going to do about it? That in combination with the actual austerity base of the actual formation of the European Union. And I found something out that was just pretty mind-boggling, and that is that there was one man, and he created Reaganomics, and he also created the euro. And I'm just going, fancy that. One man did those two things. And so his name, just grabbing this right here, is Robert Mundell. And it all goes back to libertarianism. And the most popular libertarians of the day are the Koch brothers. And people are still scratching their heads on this one. So I just thought I'd read this a little bit. And then we'll play 15 minutes of Nassim. But the idea that the euro has failed is dangerously naive. The euro is doing exactly what its progenitor and the wealthy 1%ers who adopted it predicted and planned for it to do. According to Robert Mundell, the creator of the optimum currency zone concept, the euro would really do its work as crises hit. Removing a government's control over currency would prevent nasty little elected officials from using Keynesian monetary and fiscal juice to pull a nation out of recession. More about the evil genius of the euro via The Guardian here. That progenitor is former University of Chicago economist Robert Mundell, the architect of supply-side economics, is now a professor at Columbia University. Yet I knew him through his connection to my Chicago professor, Milton Friedman. Back before Mundell's research on currencies and exchange rates had produced the blueprint for European Monetary Union, for the European Monetary Union and a common European currency. Mundell then was more concerned with his bathroom arrangements. Professor Mundell, who has both a Nobel Prize as well as an ancient villa in Tuscany, told me, incensed, quote, "They won't even let me have a toilet. They've got rules that tell me I can't have a toilet in this room. Can you imagine? As it happens, I can't. Yet I don't have an Italian villa, so I can't imagine the frustrations of bylaws governing commode placement." However, Mundell, a can-do Canadian-American, intended to do something about it, to come up with a weapon that would blow away government rules and labor regulations. He really hated the union plumbers who charged a bundle to move his throne. Quote, "It's very hard to fire workers in Europe," he complained. His answer, the euro. The euro would really do its work. As crisis hit, Mundell explained, removing a government's control over currency. This is what's the problem that the euro is for Greece right now. They have no control over it. As a matter of fact, the only one that really controls it is Germany. This is also an outflow of the fact that World War II has never ended and that we have the German Fourth Reich in our midst over there and as well over here. You know, we always talk about the 13 families, but the way we can put it is that Angela Merkel has a first cousin, and her name is Hillary Clinton. And they are literally cousins. And the thing is that Hitler was Angela Merkel's father, and Hitler was Hillary Clinton's grandfather. Yes, that's right. So, over the currency would prevent, you know, getting rid of the government control over the currency would prevent nasty little elected officials from using Keynesian monetary and fiscal juice to pull a nation out of recession. Quote, "It puts monetary policy out of the reach of politicians," he said. "And without fiscal policy, the only way nations can keep jobs is by the competitive reduction of rules on business." He cited labor laws, environmental regulations, and of course, yes, taxes. All would be flushed away by the euro. Democracy would not be allowed to interfere with the marketplace or the plumbing. As another Nobelist, Paul Krugman, notes, the creation of the eurozone violated the basic economic rule known as optimum currency area. This was a rule devised by Bob Mundell. That doesn't bother Mundell. For him, the euro wasn't about turning Europe into a powerful, unified economic union. It was a unit. It was about Reagan and Margaret Thatcher. Ronald Reagan would not have been elected president without Mundell's influence, once wrote Jude Wanniski in the Wall Street Journal. The supply-side economics pioneered by Mundell became the theoretical template for Reaganomics, or as George Bush the Elder called it, voodoo economics. The magical belief in free market nostrums that also inspired the policies of Mrs. Margaret Thatcher. Mundell explained to me that, in fact, the euro is of a piece with Reaganomics. Monetary discipline forces fiscal discipline on the politicians as well. And as crises arise, economically disarmed nations have little to do except wipe away government regulations wholesale. Privatize all state industries en masse. Slash taxes for the rich and send the European welfare state down the drain. Sound familiar, everybody? 35 years of Reaganomics over here, right beside, you know, what's going on over there with this European Union. Yeah, the official euro didn't come out until 1999, though. But I'll just say that the idea of the Eurozone has been out since the end of World War II and the lead up to what it is today. Monetary discipline forces fiscal discipline on the politicians as well. And as crises arise, economically disarmed nations have little to do except wipe away government regulations wholesale. Thus, we see that unelected Prime Minister Mario Monti is demanding labor law reform in Italy to make it easier for employers like Mondale to fire those Tuscan plumbers. Mario Draghi, the unelected head of the European Central Bank, is calling for structural reforms, a euphemism for worker crushing schemes like the right for to work for less scheme that's over here, same thing over there. They cite the nebulous theory that this internal devaluation of each nation will make them all more competitive. Austerity, austerity, austerity. Monte and Draghi cannot credibly explain how, as every country on the continent cheapens its workforce, any can gain a competitive advantage. Yet they don't have to explain their policies. They just have to let the markets go to work on each nation's bonds. Hence, currency union is class war by other means. The crisis in Europe and the flames of Greece have produced the warming glow of what the supply-siders philosopher King Joseph Schumpeter called creative destruction. Schumpeter, acolyte, and free market apologist Thomas Friedman flew to Athens to visit the impromptu shrine of the burnt-out bank where three people died after it was firebombed by anarchist protesters, and used the occasion to deliver a homily on globalization and Greek irresponsibility. The flames, the mass unemployment, the fire sale of national assets would bring about what Friedman called a regeneration of Greece, and ultimately the entire Eurozone, so that Mondale and those others with villas can put their toilets wherever they damn well want to. Far from failing, the euro, which was Mondale's baby, has succeeded probably beyond its progenitor's wildest dreams. Okay, I'm just going to let you contemplate that one for now. There's a sister article to this. It's called The Dark Legacy of Reaganomics, same guy who created that. Let's focus on the new day now, and we'll do part three with our brother Nassim Haramein. This is Giant Planet Size UFOs, The Sun Stargate, and Sun Gods by Nassim Haramein, part three of five. Here we go.
One after the other. Now let me play this in slow-mo. This first comet came by, which is already enormous. And then this one. Check this out.
Are they in the same orbital plane?
No. They're on an angle coming in.
Right, so it's not quite as bad as
it was. Yeah. However, the gravitational field of an object that big going inside the Mercury orbit should have pulled Mercury right into the sun. And look at the tail. When it's at the sun, the tail is still in the Earth's orbit.
Well, if you know in the orbit, you should be able to calculate what
the gravitational influence was.
Yeah, the perturbation is the orbit.
Yeah, we did. We shouldn't be here.
Why are we here?
If it didn't snap back, then it still moves.
Pardon me?
The orbit of the Earth, you know, if you're saying that it changed the orbit of the Earth, then it's changed.
Oh, it didn't. Because if it did change the orbit of the Earth, it would have changed. The calculation showed that it would have changed it significantly. And a significant change in our orbit would have generated tidal waves and all sorts of events on the surface of the planet that we didn't see. Well, mostly necessarily, yes.
Small change over time would be a big change over time.
It wouldn't be a small change. It would be a large change, including Mercury going into the sun behind the comet. You know? You're talking a huge gravitational field here. Extremely large. I believe that we were given another chance.
We're really not here. I'm just thinking.
Well, I think we're floating in grace. We're definitely floating in grace at this point, and somebody is taking care of us. Go ahead.
And with a tail that large, I'm amazed that we didn't get more of a visual on that thing from Earth.
Well, it's because of the angle at which it came in, and the angle of the Earth relative to it. It was not easily available. But there's pictures on the net of it. People took pictures in the morning of the comet. It's enormous.
It occurred that quickly. It was pretty...
Yeah, it was moving extremely fast. It moved extremely fast. Within the question of a few days, it was out of our solar system.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. The size of a comet, I mean, the mass of a comet is the case. The size of a comet can appear extremely large and yet be extremely small, but what we see expanded gas. Were they actually able to?
The expanded gas, that's a good point. The expanded gas of that comet is much larger than the sun. You see the size of the perturbation and the expansion of the gases around the comet makes the size of the comet actually much larger than twice the size of Jupiter. So when they say twice the size of Jupiter, they're talking about the nucleus of this comet, because the material around it, this is the size of the sun. The material around it makes it almost as large as the sun. I'm talking about size. The mass is directly related to its composition, which is supposed to be mostly ice and rocks. So, but that would be an unusual comet. In general, comets are ice and rocks.
Which would make its mass so close to the sun mass. The sun is gaseous, the object, solid object that size would have a mass.
An extremely large mass. And the calculations show with a comet made out of ice and rock of this size, the gravitational field is extraordinary, is enormous. Go ahead.
So you're thinking that this was definitely a comet.
Yeah, this was definitely a comet.
They were protected by other forces, but this wasn't. If this was just a comet, that wasn't really.
That's right, because you see, on this one, you know, unlike the videos of these other objects, you can tell there's a pretty good tail there. You know, I mean, This is a tail the size of an astronomical unit, almost, from the sun to the earth, you know? So that's, you know, that's appropriate for a comet. And see? Go ahead.
What's the source of this? Is this this is an animation, obviously, since the earth is in it, or is it?
Yeah, this is a program that gives you the activities that are going on in the solar system.
But it's based on measurements?
Yeah, it's all absolutely accurate to what's going on out there. At least some of the stuff that's released by NASA, in any case.
That's actual footage, right?
That's actual footage, yeah. This is not an animation. This is pictures taken by SOHO of this comet going by. Go ahead.
In regards to the flip, what are your information and thoughts on what the latitude was with regards to the sun, where that came from, and might that affect?
Because that would have created a large perturbation in our daily life. Now, the sun is not, you know, the activity that's going on in our solar system is just outrageous right now. You guys need to know about this. It's kind of nuts. This is what the sun does every year. Every 11 years, I'm sorry. It's called a sun cycle. Every 11 years, the sun flips its poles. Its north pole becomes its south pole, and its south pole becomes its north pole. And when it does that, and I don't mean that it flips its physical poles, it flips its magnetic poles. And when it does that, every 11 years, it goes from a smooth surface with not too many sunspots to more and more sunspots till it reaches its peak and flips its pole, and then it goes back to normal. It goes back to this type of structure. So this was the approach to the last sun cycle, the last solar maximum. Go ahead.
Is the solar maximum concurrent with the minimum magnetic field?
No, it's concurrent with the maximum magnetic field. The magnetic field becomes extremely active because of all of the sunspots generate a huge magnetic field and huge X-ray emission as well. Sunspots generate huge X-ray emissions. And that's because material is being sucked in inside a black hole, and you expect X-ray emission from that. But as you look at the sun, you find that these sunspots, you know, are supposed to go to a maximum and then go back to normal. So here's the sun in 97. The sunspot maximum was 2000, and then 2001. Actually, at the end of 2000, the beginning of 2001, and then it's supposed to go back to this. So 97, 98, it's starting to get more active. 99, you can see there's a lot of activity. And then 2000, it reached its maximum, and now it's supposed to be back to normal. Is it?
No.
No. This is the sun a few months ago. There's more sunspots on the sun than ever before. Some days they have recorded over 200 sunspots. There's never been so many sunspots on the sun. In fact, since Galileo, we haven't seen anything like it. The sun is not calming down at all. Now, the last sun cycle was 2001, plus 11 years. That gives you the date for the next sun cycle of 2012. The end of the Mayan calendar, which tells us that we are approaching a time where we are going to move into the sixth sun. Right. Now remember the dynamics of the theory we learned about this morning. Black holes generate smaller black holes that are subatomic particles that makes plasma dynamics around it. When it gets too much plasma, it starts slowing down, and then it becomes unstable, and it fluffs off some of that plasma, and then starts spinning up again. I think we're approaching one of that fluff-off part. And I think the sun has done this before. There's another thing that the sun started to do. And this data now, I don't have a scanner while I'm on the road, but I found new data recently. The sun has started to pulse these huge electromagnetic pulse emission. And I wasn't sure about this because I thought maybe it's the cameras that are going berserk on the SOHO probe. But it's not. I looked at the data of the amount of negative ions produced by the sun. And the negative ions production is going through the roof right now when these pulses are occurring. It's the negative ion production is at normal on a scale from 1 to 9 when it's at about 2 to 3. And recently it's... of the sun, all of a sudden just... pulsing like this. Let me show you what it looks like on telemetry. See? You gotta go frame by frame, otherwise you can't tell. But if you go frame by frame, can you see that? And then the next pulse.
How much time apart?
Well, this is days apart. Actually, let me see. See, the camera is taking pictures every few hours. But the thing is that the camera only takes picture every few hours. If you're lucky, it's going to take the picture of the pulse. But it might have missed a lot of pulse in between. So you don't know, but at least you see some of them there.
How long do you think you're left?
I don't know. I haven't got enough data to tell, but it's definitely significant. And the amount, and Elizabeth Rauscher and I are actually right now trying to calculate how much energy it would take for the sun to actually do that. Because when you're talking about an object the size of the sun, all of a sudden changing its amount of radiation, almost doubling it in X-ray, you know, just like that, you're talking about a lot of energy.
This is an accepted
phenomenon.
Other people
see this and they're accepted. Well, there's definitely a lot of physicists saying there's something happening about the sun. They're not necessarily all aware of this. I've made many of them aware of it, and I've shown them the data. They don't have much to say about it. They don't know what it is. It's definitely not normal.
Okay, that's our little dose of Nassim for this evening. Okay, so... let's just consult our magical unicorn again this evening. Okay.
His fell is of the desert dye, compact of living sands. His eye, black, luminary, soft, and mild, with its dark luster cools the wild. Hello? From his stately forehead springs, piercing to heaven, a radiant horn. And this is by George Darley. And then, one line. Now I will believe that there are indeed unicorns. This William Shakespeare, our brother Francis Bacon, Sir Francis Bacon, from The Tempest. I guess chapter 3 or, yeah, 3-3, first 3. And, oh my, so as the spirit of the zeitgeist, the spirit of the age that we are in, all of this is leading to one thing. We are the ones we've been waiting for. We the people in unity consciousness. That's the unicorn's message. And let's embrace this quality of serendipity to the mix here that we're in. There's something about this resonant core of our being that is emerging over all the rules or deregulations or re-regulations or things that don't come from the heart, and replace them with heartfelt energy. And so, with the risk of another false flag tomorrow morning, let us use the serendipity and find the silver lining in whatever it may be. Que sera, sera. Unity. Okay, and Inshallah, Rama, and Sat Nam.
Sat Nam Ji.
We'll see you tomorrow. Mother will be here. I'm sure she's got plenty she wants to say. And see you in your dreams and on that bridge. Namaste, and my music maestro.